Hey there, listeners. Need a new gig in the writing world? Have you considered becoming a book coach but never known how to get started or been able to envision exactly what that might look like for you? Author Accelerator can help. Sign up at bookcoaches.com to get a free mini course on what book coaching is, who makes a good book coach, and how you can make money helping writers soar.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone trying to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fictional things, non-fictional things, things that are in between, although we recommend that you identify those clearly for those who would wonder. And in short, although I'm never really short, this is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and currently working on the proposal for my third book. And you can find my work at the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Atlantic and Airmail.
I'm Serena Bowen. I'm the author of 35 romance novels. My latest one was called Bombshells and just hit the USA Today list last month. And now I am writing a novella and having a surprisingly fun time doing it.
And I am KJ Delantonia, the author of The Chicken Sisters, as well as the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, and I am in revision hell. So that makes of my next book, and that makes today's topic especially wonderful, because today the three of us are going to talk about being edited and how much we love and hate it.
I love this topic. I'm so excited because I think my approach to being edited has really evolved over time. And I think that's a grown-up thing, so I guess I'm supposed to be proud of myself.
Yay, gold star for you.
Well, mainly because I've been really lucky to have good editors and bad editors, and the good editors are the ones that I've stuck with, and it's helped me become a better writer. I think good editors have definitely helped me become a better writer. They've definitely taught me, Gail Winston, my editor at Harper, definitely taught me how to write a book. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. She taught me how to write a book, and I owe her so much. And as much as there are times when I'm like, how dare someone change that sentence? I love that sentence. 99.9% of the time, she's absolutely correct. But anyway.
Well, let's talk about what makes a good editor, which I have had mostly good editors throughout my career, but I've had one or two that were less good. So let's talk about what makes a good editor and how you can spot them, because for a lot of us, and that includes me, I hired my first editor. It was Jenny Nash, and she'd call herself a book coach, but I would call her an editor, and she was. So if you're looking for an editor, what should we look for?
First, I just want to stop and wonder what that noise is.
It's
yours?
Okay. It's Crypto.
Yeah,
that's Crypto. He's laying on the ground and scratching.
All right, well, I will answer the question. I hire editors all the time. And of course, I've also had the kind of editor who is assigned to you by your publishing house. And first of all, if any of our listeners are actually looking to hire an editor, make sure that you're in the right genre, that the person who's going to be editing you understands the reader expectations of your genre. So that's just first and foremost. If you're writing a thriller, you need somebody who is very familiar with the pace and, you know, the job of what a thriller does. And secondly, you establish expectations with whoever is editing you, whether it's your book coach or your editor at a big five publisher or somebody that you've hired to help you on this journey. You need to know what the scope of their editing is going to be and what you both expect to get out of it.
I think there's something also that evolves as you work with an editor longer, but there's that period when you start with someone new where you're not, at least I have found, I worked, so when I wrote for The Atlantic over a number of years, the editors changed a lot, and it was always scary every time because I had, you know, I had really good relationships, especially with my very early editors at The Atlantic, and we'd evolved this relationship. We understood, like, I could push back this much and they would push back that much. But in the beginning, you know, there's this fear, especially if you're just happy to be getting published as I was at the beginning. It's just like, I'll do anything you say, just tell me. And but then at a certain point, as your voice evolves, you begin to understand when it's time to push back and when it's not. But I think with a new editor, there have been times when I've said, you know, what is our scope here? Could you give me sort of an idea of how you're feeling about the piece overall, and whether we're looking at line edits or whether we're looking at sort of, and editors I think that I've worked with have been pretty good about that with new writers, especially when they're working with new freelancers. They'll say like, okay, I really like this big picture, but I think we need to move these things around and then we'll get to the line edits. So developing that relationship can be scary, but it's also really worth doing if you find an editor that you like working with, to try to continue working with that editor, because not only can you learn a lot from them, that relationship makes the editing process so much easier.
Well, I think it's interesting that you sort of went straight to when you push back and talked about how when you first start as a freelancer or in a job where you have an editor. Like, so now we're talking about editing short pieces. And I want to say very quickly that when I said I've had good, bad editors and I've had less good editors, I was thinking about these editors, because mm-hmm. I've only had two book editors, right, and they're both wonderful.
Right.
Well, three because of my nonfiction. But anyway, so there are people who have a hard time being edited at all. You know, and they will, as speaking of someone who's been, you know, the editor, they will send you the piece and they won't want to make any changes. And that is all, that is just as bad as, it is probably worse than just taking all of the changes willy-nilly. And
I'm trying to imagine being the writer that's working with someone at the New York Times and being unwilling to make any changes. I just can't even get into that headspace.
Yeah, I don't know that it ever happened that specifically. It's more that I have heard that, but There definitely are writers who are resistant to things that will make their piece better. And I think that when you're new in a relationship with an editor, you need to manage that really carefully, because the editor will not want to work with... I had a list, to be honest. I had a list. I think there were 5 people on it. And they were called Never Again. And it was because they were really, really, you know, every single thing that I said, they questioned. Or they couldn't, this would be another sort of piece of being edited, they couldn't take my suggestions and do anything with them. So if I said, well, I think you should move this up and start, you know, with this final paragraph, this is your beginning, which is a really common thing in an essay, they would be like, how? I am flabbergasted. I do not know how to write this any differently. So I would suggest that when you get edits back on a piece, you breathe for at least 10 minutes before responding to your editor.
Actually, can I...
A day would be better, but it depends. You know?
Can I actually interject even earlier, even before that? So every time I've ever gotten edits on something really big, like my editor at Harper, or a big essay that I've put a lot of work into, I actually don't open that email until I'm actually prepared to sit down and think carefully, and I have the headspace to think carefully about those edits, and unless we're on like some insane deadline or something like that. Because for me, knowing that they're there and that there's a lot of red ink spilled on that page and not having the space to deal with it is more stressful than knowing it's sitting in my inbox and not having seen any red ink yet. So for me, it's always really important when I get those edits back to sort of, if it means I wait a day, if it means, you know, I'm on to the next business day, whatever, that seems to work really, really well for me. And I think the on the other side, there's a fear of opening the edits, just because what if they're going to say you stink? Or what if you're going to have horrible imposter syndrome or something, there's always something harder about thinking about the edits. And I know I sound like I'm contradicting myself, but there's something harder about wrestling with the edits that are out there as opposed to just opening those edits and starting the work. Because I think once you start the work, and this is, I guess I can't speak to KJ's current edits, of course, but there's something about taking control and actually starting the work that makes those edits seem more manageable.
Sabrina, when you get edits, what's your go-to strategy? And your situation, at least now, is a little different because you have you've paid for those edits. Like, you know, you've really sought them out.
Right. So when I did a 3-book series at Penguin, I just have to say that I was very lightly edited there, and everyone I worked with at Penguin was so great. But I had 3 editors over 3 books, so I sort of lost that big connection from the person who bought the series to the person who finished it. Mm-hmm. And so I was always very lightly edited there, and it was a little scary in its own way because you want to make sure that there's, you know, enough is happening. And now I definitely pay for editors who are the hardest on me. Like when the person who's usually the hardest on me isn't available and I have to pick a backup, like that's actually a problem. So I feel like as you're going through your edits, you should actually start to like hate the person a little bit because they should be making you a little bit uncomfortable. Also, you learn over time your editor's own quirks. Like we all have quirks that we do, you know, poorly, well, maybe too often, whatever they are. And the editor's job is to poke you on that. But I also know, you know, if my favorite editor hates a weak heroine. And I actually handed her a book once and said, guess what? This heroine is a doormat at the beginning of the book. And this is a book where she learns how not to be. So like, keep that in mind as we're going through here, because I knew she was going to like, I knew that was going to be a problem for her. So I trust her so much or we would not be doing this, but I also know what she's going to push back on. And it's, you have to find that place of confidence with yourself in your work. For example, I have a book that's out for editing now. And when somebody comes back and says, I didn't buy this part that happened here in the karaoke scene or something, I didn't buy that song was available. I'm just making some crud up for you. Right. I am going to take that edit so lightly because I know what romance readers are here for. And they are not here for mm-hmm. that granular detail. But if she says, I don't buy the hero saying I love you in chapter 23, that is an edit. I'm going to like be like, okay, wait, hold on. You know, that goes to the heart of what my readers are reading a romance for, and I have to weigh that edit more stringently than something else.
Something that I've noticed about my relationship with both actually my agent, KJ's, and my agent, my agent edits my stuff before it goes to my editor, and my editor, both of those people are not effusive with compliments. Like they are very supportive and wonderful. But at first I thought that what I really wanted was someone who was just gonna, you know, give me a lot of feedback about how well I'm learning this and how well I'm doing incorporating these edits. But I've come to find out that I actually really like the sparse compliments because I really have to earn them. And that means a lot to me when I get them, so much so that I may have screenshotted a few of them in the markup.
I am a little surprised at having your agent edit things first. And this actually came up with another friend of mine last month. Mm-hmm. Because my fear here would be if my agent says you need to change the order of these 2 chapters, and then the editor could just put it back the other way, you know, a few weeks later. Like, how do you balance that? Like, do you ever just take the agent's advice lightly enough so that you're more prepared to do it if the editor asks you for the same thing? Or are you making like major changes for your agent?
I can't speak to KJ's perspective on working with Lori, but Lori has always been, number one, really smart about the edit. She's been right so often. And I also have to give some background, which is that she worked for my editor a long time ago as an editorial assistant and knows what my editor likes and doesn't like. And that has been an invaluable part of this process. That's not to say we haven't disagreed. There have been a couple times that, in fact, there's one that one of my favorites is in the book, I swear once in my own language. I swear twice, once in a quote and once in my own language. And Lori said, you have to decide if you're going to be the kind of author who swears or doesn't swear. And I don't see you as the kind of author who swears. But this line was really important to me. Like, I don't actually usually get that emotionally connected to lines anymore. Or at least if I do, it's short-lived until I've had a chance to sort of realize that I'm being ridiculous. So when it came to, so I changed it for the first edit. And then when I submitted my stuff to Gail, I said, this word's kind of important to me and I'd like to keep it. How do you feel about that? And she's like, yeah, that's fine. But there are certain things that Lori has... Lori has also helped affect the way I think about the way I use other people's quotes and stuff like that. And it's become a permanent sort of, it's become hardwired in me. And it's something that I've come to really trust. And once after Gift of Failure, once I saw how Lori and Gail's edits worked together, I realized it was a really good synergy. But I can absolutely see where if the agent and the editor didn't know each other and didn't know each other's language, that that could be a problem.
Yeah. So Mike, fiction agent who is not Lori also edits if I want her to before I send things. And what I do is that I take her advice if I like her advice. And I do that much more strongly with my agent than I do with the editor. So if I'm like 100% on board, you are absolutely right. I can't believe that, you know, I ended this book with the heroine being floated off in a balloon. That was a terrible ending. And it would be. then I'm going to change
it. Unless it's the movie Up, apparently. Then it's
right.
Not,
it works for that. So given that that's not what I'm writing, that isn't going to work for me. So yeah. So I'm a little more judicious now with my agents, editors. And that's with this book. So with the Chicken Sisters, we sold it, and I got a wonderful edit from my editor, but it was a very specific edit. It was an edit of the emotional piece of it, which I really hadn't put enough weight into. And so, you know, but before that, I had taken my agent's advice right up to when we sold it, because we didn't have another editor yet. Now I have a different editor, and she is not the editor who bought this particular book, although I think she has grown to like it. I hope so. And she is really different than that first editor. She is more demanding, which is amazing. And so sometimes I've got, like, my agent going, well, don't take out the good stuff, and the editor going, yeah, but I think we need different good stuff. And it is a little, it is a difficult needle to thread. So I really try to figure out what I myself think is good, but that can be hard. Because I do find with big stuff, a lot of the times if an editor is like, well, you know, I really think this character, you know, needs to be more likable. Just as, if you say, okay, I think you think the character needs to be a little more likable because you're not having fun in this section of the book. So I'm going to fix the fun part, but not make the character more likable. The editor will, A, 100% be on board with that, and B, sometimes you don't even have to say it. Like, sometimes you can just sort of go, well, I don't want to make the character more likable, but clearly there's something about this part of the book that isn't working, so let me try to figure out what that is.
You bring up an interesting point, which is every once in a while, we get an edit that doesn't make literal sense, but then does make sense. So, for example, if I were to receive an edit on this book that says, you never told me about how she feels about such and such. And I could be like, I do too. It's in chapter 4. But then your author voice has to hear, no, the reader didn't hear it loudly enough. So it's either in the wrong place,
right,
or you glanced it too lightly. Or like, even if their directly contradicting the text, they're still not directly contradicting the text unless it was just, you know, a very random error. So a lot of being edited well is interpreting what the person says. Like if they say your character is not likable, but you are able to discern that this part of the book doesn't have enough fun in it, that's a really valuable part of learning to be edited.
Yeah. In some ways, you can't say your editor is wrong if they're editing as a reader. You can say that the thing they want you to change isn't something that you should change, but you can't, yeah, you can't really argue with their reader experience, which is an interesting, yeah. So that's, and I think that's really different in books than it is if you're working for something like, if you're working for a magazine or a website, because in that case, your editor is often editing for voice because they have a consistent voice across the property. And sometimes you can't argue with that either, but it's kind of for a different reason.
The thing that I've come to find incredibly invaluable about Gail as an editor is that when I'm deep into a book, it's really hard for me to keep the big picture in my head. And Gail is all about the big picture. And so that's been really, really helpful for me. You know, short of, I guess, reading the whole book over again every single time I go into edits on a particular chapter, it can be really hard to see the forest for the trees. And that's where an editor can be really helpful. Did I say this before? Wait, I cut it and we moved it somewhere else. So I'm not sure if I said this anymore and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's something I really value.
Yeah, for me, it's in fiction, at least it's both times, actually, my editor has been the one to say, you know what this book is really about? Going from being an outsider to being an insider. And I'm like, forehead smack. Yes, you're right. Thank you very much. That is what this is about. I will finally put that post-it note about the theme on my desk that supposedly you're supposed to have there from the very minute that you start writing, because I just had never quite distilled it down to that, that thing. And then this goes back to what Serena was saying about how you got to think about what your readers want. And hopefully your editor knows that. Because like Serena's readers, my readers are not here to figure out why my how my protagonist gets her health insurance, which is something I really obsess about for reasons I cannot explain. Like I was sitting on the phone with my editor this time and saying, so does it bother you that I don't think you could really make enough money to survive off a farm like this? And she was like, no. And I said, but should I focus on it being like about sheep or honey or maple? And she's like, no, but I'm not sure this would work. She's like, no, seriously, we just like the farm. We don't care if like in reality you could pay for your health insurance, you know, your Obamacare using this particular farm income. Please just stop and give us more llamas.
Yeah, I love that edit of the one I get a lot is your reader's not going to care, like about how many barrels are in the bottom of the ship that brought the beer.
I knew we were going with the beer. Yeah.
Your reader doesn't need to know this, or your reader isn't going to care about this, or the one the really valuable one that's really difficult to get on short pieces is what's your point? That's like, and I do a lot of editing for the op-ed project, and often that's a big one, like, okay, I'm halfway through this essay and I don't yet know what your point is. And you can say that more nicely than what's your point, but the what you're saying is what's your point. And that's something that's incredibly important to take seriously. If your reader doesn't know what your point is, you're sunk.
You know, this takes me way back, and I'm not sure I told you guys this, but the way that I figured out what editors are really for was when I accidentally became one myself. In college, I knew I wanted to go into publishing, and I was at Yale, and they every year, the staff of the Yale Daily News edited this book called The Insider's Guide to the Colleges, and every year there was a new edition of this book, so every year we sort of rewrote and re-edited it. And I volunteered on this project because it would look really good on my resume. And then as I was becoming a senior, the editor at St. Martin's Press of the project called me and said, would you be the editor-in-chief next year? And I was surprised because I had not volunteered to be that. And I was afraid that I wouldn't know what to do. Like, you want me to edit a book, but I've never edited a book before. This is just a disaster. So anyway, I'd said yes, because I guess I hadn't learned how to say no yet. And then these articles start coming in, and I pick up my red pen, and I'm so afraid because I don't know how to edit. But I quickly realized that the main job was not to be the person who wrote the piece. And once I figured that out, I calmed way down, and I did a fine job of editing for content all of these articles, because my job, as I saw it, was not to be the person, not to be inside that other person's head, so that if they said something that didn't make a lot of sense, I just knew it, because my job was to be me and to have written 500 of these articles myself already, and to just know, you know, the difference between making your point and not making your point. And then it took me another decade to figure out how to translate that into editing myself. To take
editing
that same,
yourself is hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, to take that same skill of not being the person who wrote it and to just objectively read what you've written, which is very difficult. And then the stage even beyond that is to really teach yourself in your career as a writer to judge your work without judging yourself. And I have a friend who's really struggling with where she is in her writing career right now and what she wants. And I had to say that to her this year. Like, you have to judge your work and not yourself and figure out how to make that distinction, because this is killing you, because you're taking the failure of this one project personally, which does not make any sense from over here, from 3 feet away. So it's all part of trying to understand how editing in the world works for your head.
That is such an important thing to hear, because I have become excellent at editing myself in essay form. Like, I can essay my edit 800 words of mine really well. Like, I got that. But this is only my second novel, so I really need to let go of the fact that I am not, I'm not seeing the things that the editor sees, and stop judging myself for my editing failures. I maybe need to be another 500 novels in. Let us hope not that many, but
I don't think I get to that point until the end, when I'm almost ready to send it in, and then I read it out loud. Reading it out loud tends to be the place where I become the reader and not the writer. And that's been really, really helpful for me, that reading it out loud, which has become something that I absolutely 100% have to do before I hand something in. I can't get around it anymore, because not only do I catch a lot of things that I wouldn't have caught, I also realize, oh, wait, that makes no sense. I haven't already addressed that, or whatever. Something about the process of hearing it actually in my outside of my head.
Even a whole book. Mm-hmm. You read the whole book.
I hand in chapters individually, usually either to Lori, or usually a chapter will go to Lori first and then to Gail. And so I always read it out loud before it goes to Lori, and then sometimes before it goes, but almost always, especially if it's one piece at a time.
Do you do that, Serena?
Oh, I was just going to say that I actually, it sounds dumb, but I read out loud inside my head. So it performs the same function for me, but I am a big fan of reading things out loud. It's much easier mm-hmm. to catch awkwardnesses and overly long sentences. But now I've kind of internalized this, but yes, it's a great thing.
Yeah, I often will just shut the doors, or I'll do it outside, or do it when no one else is here, or my family has just gotten used to the fact that I do this, and it's weird, but it helps me. I've always done it. I tell my students to do it. You just catch, and even just from finding typos, it helps a lot. Mainly because by the time—
I just don't think I've allowed enough time.
Yeah, it's a lot of time. But for me, it also just brings it all together as one big piece, rather than thinking of it as fragmented sections in my head, which is how I tend to think of it inside my head. But once it's outside my head, I think of it as a whole. It's just a quirk of how I think, I guess.
So I wanted to talk to people about how to be edited. Do we think have we covered that? Do we have any other thoughts on being the editee? We talked about not, you know, oh, You know what we didn't really talk about is, you touched on it at the very beginning, but the way that the edits can make you feel like a massive, you know, complete and total and utter failure, and how to pull yourself up and put the big girl pants on and instead of arguing with them, deal with them.
I think it helped that I was a journalist first before I wrote the big things, that the big scarier edited things. But it's, I think it's always hard. And I think for me, even now, I have to get in a headspace of this is work. This is not personal. Mm. This is work. And being edited is a part of, and also as a teacher, I have to think about it that way. Like, I can't tell my students that editing is part of the process unless I really buy it myself and that it's part of writing. But for me, I think of that's where the really where the work, like, it's hardly ever play to be edited. But the writing is the play, the, you know, whether you want to think of it as the Stephen King, like, write with the door closed, edit with the door open kind of thing. This is part of the work. And in order for me to earn the right to continue to do this work, this is part of the work. And it can be harder to hear, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it also, and the one thing I want to come back around to, trusting your gut at a certain point, you know, you talked about writers that are not willing to be edited. There have been a few, as I've developed my voice over time, and as I've felt more confident pushing back, there's even one moment still with one of my, she's not even my editor anymore. I haven't worked with her in ages, but we still joke about this one thing where she's like, no, we really need to get rid of this. And I'm like, no, this is going to be the line that people will quote. And it ended up being the line that people quoted. And she's like, okay, well, if you feel this strongly about it, I guess we can keep it. And we kept it. And it was a big deal in the piece. It got retweeted all over the place because of that one line. And, you know, we still joke about that because she was learning too. And I think we tend to forget that, you know, often, especially now with digital, for example, at The Atlantic, there was a digital side and a magazine side. And the magazine side tended to be older, the lifers, you know, that kind of thing. And the digital side tended to be, most of my editors were younger than I was. And so we tend to be really afraid of editors. But if we just remember that they're becoming too, they're learning, they're becoming, they're figuring things out as well, I think that helps me sort of take those edits as part of the process of becoming a better writer.
And sometimes they're learning about you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is something that I'm experiencing with this editor that is editing me right now. I think was very relieved to hear that the things that we're fixing now in this manuscript are also the things that came last in the Chicken Sisters. I think she just wasn't, you know, she just wasn't sure. Maybe normally, because it varies, you know, there's a big pile of different things that go into making a novel, and some people go back in and put the setting in last, and some people go back in and put the movement in last, and some people go back in and put the emotion in last, and you know, I think she just didn't know what she had on her hands. So, you know, to some extent, saying to your editor, this is really great, I always need this kind of feedback, or even going in, if you're hiring an editor, if you know something about yourself, what I really want you to read for is whether or not the romance is believable, or what I really want you to read for is every chapter ending on something that makes you want to go ahead and turn the page? Like, whatever you know are your weaknesses, those are a good thing to say to that editor, especially if it's somebody that you're hiring before you submit.
One last thing I would love to add is, I think it's really important for me anyway, especially when I'm being edited by someone who makes a big impact on the quality of a piece, is I thank them in the comments, like right there in the markup. I'll say, you know what? I never thought about it that way, but this line is so much stronger, or this idea is so much stronger. Thank you for helping me think about it that way. Rather than, you know, I'm a big fan of thank you notes, and I'm a big fan of, you know, sending the flowers or whatever. But those small moments of thank you, I think, in the comments and in the markup are really, really important.
Yeah, agreed. Thank your editors.
editors take such huge pride. I mean, when you think about it, you know, like my editor, Gail Winston, is, you know, an institution, and she's been around for a long time, and she's so good at her job. And to her, all of these books are her little book babies, too. I mean, they're, you know, I wrote this book, but she had a very big hand in ushering this book into the world. And so I like to give her ownership and credit her with ownership of that as well. So anyway. Do you think we covered
it
all?
What a good episode.
Yeah, I think so.
If you all, readers, have any questions, listeners, have any questions about being edited, if there's something that we didn't talk about that you would like to hear, head over to our Facebook group, which is Am Writing Podcast on Facebook, and go ahead and ask. Or if you are signed up to receive our weekly email, as you should be, then you can always just reply to that. Maybe you should get the weekly email just so you can occasionally reply to it, because it just comes into my inbox, and then one of us will answer you, because that's what we do.
Are we talking at all about what we're reading?
I think so.
Okay, good.
I planned to.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm here for that.
If you like hashtag am writing, and I know you do because you're here listening, you will love Writing Class Radio. Writing Class Radio airs true personal stories and gives you tips on how to write your own stories. We're also open to airing and discussing your personal essay. Everyone has a story. What's yours? Find Writing Class Radio wherever you find your podcasts.
All right. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about what we've been reading? Because I have not done this in a while. I've been in the midst of all the pub week stuff, and you two have been pulling more than your weight around here, and I have not had a chance to talk about what I've been reading in a while.
Well, you better go ahead then.
Yes. Get started.
There's been so much. Okay. So I've just finished listening to a book called Turning Point by Chloe Angel, and she... it was really, really cool. It's about, the subtitle actually will give you some of the information, how a new generation of dancers is saving ballet from itself. It is a deep dive into the history of ballet and how ballet became so white, why it remains so white, why the imagery and the dancers and the ballets that you see, and why it's also so male, that, you know, the choreographers are almost all male. It's just really interesting. And she did something with ballet that I had never seen before. And I actually don't even care about ballet, but I love a good deep analysis of an art form or of a topic. And so I really, really enjoyed that as well. And then I also had the opportunity, and I have to recommend this because I don't know if it's actually out quite yet. Hopefully it'll be out soon. There is a book by Brian Broome, Broome, called Punch Me Up to the Gods. And the reviews on this book were insane. The blurbs on the back of this book are insane. I've been listening to it through Libro FM as an advance copy. This is a ridiculous, amazing book. I can't begin to tell you how it's a memoir. I can't even tell you really what it's about because it'll ruin some things. But if you're looking for a really good memoir, Punch Me Up to the Gods by Brian Broome is remarkable. Highly recommend.
Serena, read anything good lately?
Yes, I'm reading a book you gave me. I'm reading Act Your Age, Eve Brown by Talia Hibbert, and it is delightful. I'm so happy to have finished my work for last month so that I could dive into this. Her close writing of relationships and observations of people is just a delight.
I am torn. I don't know which book that I've been reading I want to talk about. Have I talked about Malibu Rising?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so Malibu Rising is Taylor Jenkins Reid's latest.
I'm really excited.
I was lucky enough to get an arc of it. And it's funny because the plot is definitely exactly what Serena mentioned early in the episode, which is doormat becomes not doormat, although it seems much more, and it is much more complex than that. But if you boiled it down to a post-it note, it might just be that, which I think is fun. It is truly a masterwork of throwing out a whole bunch of strands and a lot of characters and then bringing them all together. And I really enjoyed it. And I think I haven't talked about it yet because it's not out, but it will be. By the time you listen to this, it will either be out or like coming momentarily. So if you're a Taylor Jenkins Reid fan, and even if you're not, absolutely you should grab this one. I really enjoyed it.
Well, and Daisy Jones and the Six is being made into a movie that I also can't wait for because there's going to be music. I'm so thrilled to hear that you're enjoying it because there's nothing worse than, you know, in fact, I won't name any names, but you two know who I'm talking about. I just read a book by someone whose other book I had loved, and this new book I just despise. And I'm so sad because I saw that this new book was coming out by someone whose first book I had enjoyed, and second book, they just went in a very different direction and just really, really despise it. And it's always so sad.
Wow, despise is strong. Yeah. I had realized you were not enjoying it, but I hadn't realized we'd reached the despicable levels.
I abandoned it.
Well, we're sorry, y'all. We are indeed vague. Yeah. We're vague booking here.
We're vague booking,
we're going to do it.
But it's another one of those other moments when you realize it's okay to abandon, and I did. But I'm so excited about the Taylor Jenkins Reid because I loved Daisy Jones and the Six.
You know, props to an author who had a big success going in a different direction.
Yeah. Yes.
We can't all write the same book over and over and over and over again. I think that's fine. There are definitely authors where I've liked some of their work and I haven't liked some of their work, and you know, so be it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I already suggested you follow us on Facebook. I might add that if you sign up for our weekly email, you'll hear everything about the podcasts when the podcast happens and sometimes get random spontaneous bonus material. We try to give lots of bonuses to our supporters who we love and who do, in fact, fully support the production of this podcast, which we are extremely grateful to, along with our wonderful sponsor. So that's it for this week.
Can I just remind people that if you're liking this, to also go check out the hashtag MWriting Facebook group, where lately there have been some really fun announcements. Some of the members of our Facebook group have had some great successes over the past season, and it's really cool to go over there and see all of the support for each other. I love that place.
It is.
Yeah, it's the only reason I'm still on Facebook. I got to tell you, I love that place. So
yep,
check it out.
That's what I got bookmarked.
Yep. Excellent. Until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work. Save. Pause. Stop. Aww. Thank you.